This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Our guest, Bill Nye, is a respected actor in British film, TV, and theater, who's become better known to American audiences in recent years. In the 2003 film, Love Actually, Nye played an aging rock star named Billy Mack, who's briefly revived his career by doing a sappy Christmas version of the Troggs hit Love Is All Around. In this scene, he's doing a radio interview about his comeback.
Billy, welcome back to the airwaves. New Christmas single cover of Love Is All Around.
Except we've changed the word love to Christmas.
Yes, is that an important message to you, Bill?
Not really, Mike. Christmas is a time for people with someone they love in their lives.
And that's not you?
That's not me, Michael. When I was young and successful, I was greedy and foolish, and now I'm left with no one, wrinkled and alone.
Wow. Thanks for that, Bill.
For what?
Well, for actually giving a real answer to a question. It doesn't often happen here at Radio Watford, I can tell you.
Ask me anything you like, I'll tell you the truth.
The best shag you ever had?
Britney Spears.
Wow.
No, only kidding. She was rubbish.
That's Bill Nye in Love Actually. Nye has also appeared in The Constant Gardener, Notes on a Scandal, Pirates of the Caribbean, Shaun of the Dead, The Girl in the Cafe, and the acclaimed British TV series State of Play. Nye plays a British intelligence agent in the new film Page 8, which will be shown Sunday on Public TV's Masterpiece. Nye spoke with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies.
Bill Nye, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Page 8. This is the new film you've done, which is going to be shown on public broadcasting stations in the States. You play a British intelligence officer who happens upon a document that could lead to an international scandal and prove that the prime minister might have known or been complicit in some nasty things. And yeah. I thought we'd listen to a clip here. This is where you are talking to your daughter, who is played by Felicity Jones. She is an artist, and you're talking right after an opening of some of her work. And she's asking you what you thought.
For once in your life, you might try telling me the truth.
Only if you insist.
I insist.
All right, they look like works of despair. If the despair isn't real, then I don't like them because they're fake, they're unfelt, they're avant-garde protest and nothing more. But if the despair is real, then that hurts too because you're my daughter and I don't want you to suffer.
They're not fake.
That's what I thought.
So what bothers you? If I'm unhappy, then it's your fault. They make you feel guilty, the absent father, the evasive father.
The pictures are morbid. They're morbid, Julianne. Okay, I can see it may be my problem to do with getting older, but why do you want to piss on life before you've even lived it?
I don't think you should say any more.
I was wondering.
Yeah.
That young man you were talking to.
Which one?
I think his name's Ralph. Ralph Wilson.
You're working. Hell, you're not even talking to me, you're working.
Oh, come on, let me take you home.
No. I don't want you anywhere near me. Do you have any honest relationships at all?
And that's our guest Bill Nye with Felicity Jones in the new film Page 8. I mean, you know, one of the reasons that I picked this clip was she says at the end to her father, your character, you're always working. And there's something about the mentality of a spy, somebody who is never off, always analyzing things from a dozen angles. I mean, how do you play somebody in that world?
Well, it's quite tricky because you are never wholly telling the truth. One of the difficulties about working in the intelligence services is that you can't even allow your family to know specifically about what you're involved in. And your children are amongst those who are excluded from knowing the facts of your working life. And the secrecy just goes on and on and on and kind of grows. And also, whenever you're speaking, you're only telling part of the truth. It makes it very satisfying as a part because it's quite it's complex and interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. Now that you mention it, when I listen to you in that part, you have this weight to your voice as if you're sort of burdened by all the deception in your life.
Yeah, I tried to give it a different kind of tone. The tone on any part is the difficult thing to hit, and I hope I established one that gave it some kind of... so you can understand the burden of his responsibilities. He has a document, as you said, which incriminates the Prime Minister, played by Ralph Fiennes, and could lead to big trouble. We're in fact going to make two more of these films next year, so the story will continue. So, we laughingly refer to them as page 9 and page 10, but I'm sure they'll have some other title.
Yeah, it is only partially resolved, and there's this wonderful scene where you confront the Prime Minister, Ralph Fiennes, and it's this raw power against intelligence. Must have been fun to shoot.
It was great to shoot, actually. And because it's David Hare wrote and directed the movie, as you know, and it's because of him that we can attract people like Rachel Weisz, Ralph Fiennes, Sir Michael Gambon. They came because it's David. And Ralph came and played a relatively small role, so he was there for 2 days and we were locked in a room together. It was truly exciting because the writing is fabulous and that particular scene is very powerful and beautifully put together. So it was very satisfying for both Ralph and myself.
We're speaking with Bill Nye. His new film is Page 8. We'll talk more after a quick break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, our guest is actor Bill Nye. You might remember him from the films Love Actually and State of Play. His new film, which is going to be shown on PBS stations, is Page 8. You grew up in England. Your mom was a nurse, and your dad managed a garage, right? And your home was on the premises, is that right?
Yeah, as you might say in America, I was born in a gas station. I wasn't actually born on the premises. I was born in a hospital. But we lived in a house where if you opened our front door, there were the gas pumps, the petrol pumps, as we call them. And my first ever job was serving petrol.
And you left school at an early age, is that right, and left the house at times?
I did. I ran away from home under the influence of Ernest Hemingway's short stories and Bob Dylan's first album. And I went to Paris in order to write the great English short story or something. Didn't write a word, but managed to flunk all my exams. I left school around, I think I was either 15 or 16, which wasn't that unusual in those days for the kind of people around our way. You weren't expected to have any further education, really, in those days. It's all a long time ago. So I did leave school pretty early, yeah.
Actors can get typecast, and you have a very striking appearance. I mean, you're thin, you have these high cheekbones. I mean, some might call you patrician-looking. What typical roles did you get cast for earlier in your career?
Well, you go through phases, and it's often, if you play one part relatively successfully, you tend to get offered the same kind of role again. I used to play kind of working-class boys. I played army soldiers. I played, various kind of working class characters. And then at some point or other, I must have played a middle class part. And then I got a long run of middle class parts. And now I never really get asked to play much else, apart from, you know, when I get to play octopus people like Davy Jones in Pirates of the Caribbean.
A unique role, to be sure.
Well, quite.
A journalist writing about you after an interview, she said, "You make everything seem so easy and amusing." And I have to say, looking at your performances, there is an ease about you. It just is as if this is just so naturally done. I gather from reading that acting didn't come easily to you.
No, it didn't come easily to me at all. And it took me a while to work it out, but I think I have a kind of a tendency to look relaxed, even though internally I'm kind of speeding on anxiety. I have a kind of anti-talent. I apparently look as if I'm relaxed, which I'm very, very, very grateful for, you know, because a lot of the time, particularly in the early years, I used to stand on stages kind of rooted to the spot, not knowing what to do with my hands and not knowing, you know, all the usual concerns for a young actor. You're not supposed to know what to do with your hands. You have to kind of learn what to do with your hands or what not to do with your hands. So, yeah, no, it didn't come easy to me. I was incredibly self-conscious. The great news for anyone trying to act who, you know, has average difficulty in, you know, trying to kind of stay calm, is that they don't know what's going on in your head, and you can operate whilst your head is attacking you.
Were auditions tough for you back in the early days?
Auditions were an absolute nightmare for me, yeah. They are for anyone. It's a horrible process. And one of the greatest things that ever happened to me, certainly, you know, professionally, certainly, and on a personal level, is that I don't have to audition anymore. And I can't tell you how thankful I am for that. I mean, sitting in those rooms waiting to go in on some cold winter morning and pretend to be a knight on horseback or something, or, you know, or go and have a nervous breakdown in front of people who don't smile, it's very, very tough.
Do you have a particularly memorable or forgettable audition?
I do remember for John Boorman, who is a great English director who made the movie Excalibur, Hope and Glory. He's a great English director. And he was very, very nice to me. But I did have to, in his living room, pretend to be on horseback. That means bumping up and down. And I had to pretend to have a sword in my hand and fight with Lancelot, I think. Or maybe I was being Lancelot. I didn't get the part, as is now, you know, if you watch the film Excalibur, I'm not in it. but it was one of those lonely moments. Also, I mean, I did a movie once called Still Crazy, in which I played another rock and roll idiot. And they got me up very early in the morning, put me in a disused tax office on the edge of London town, and they put me in a pair of velvet flared loon pants, which means they sit very low on your hips, gentlemen. I was 46 at the time, and they gave me a top which did not meet my trousers. They then put hair extensions on me and some very weird rock and roll makeup, put me in front of a karaoke machine, and played Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple. And I had to mime to Smoke on the Water. Luckily, I remembered that it was supposed to be funny. If I'm ever required to be, you know, people say be attractive or be charming or, God forbid, be sexy or anything, I go to pieces. But if it's supposed to be funny, then, you know, I think, you know, maybe I'm in with a chance. I did some high kicks in 4-inch heels and I ripped the trousers. I did a high kick and pretend to hurt my back. That's always a good one. If you want to get a cheap laugh, do a high kick and then pretend it's hurt your back. It's in the movie, actually.
So through the 70s and 80s, I mean, you developed a career. You got into television. You did some film. And I know that you developed a drinking problem, but you managed to keep working. I mean, did that hold you back at all, do you think, keep you from getting better?
I don't want to talk about this at length, but I will say a couple of things. And if you'll forgive me, I won't say anything further. One is that I didn't develop a drinking problem. I am one of those people who is built in such a way that I have, from the very beginning, an unfortunate relationship with alcohol. So there was never a good time for me to have a drink. And there's one further thing I will say, but I'd rather not say anything further just for reasons that we don't have to go into. It's not because I have any shame in this area. I'm a sober alcoholic. It's a perfectly respectable thing to be, and I've made arrangements about it. But I will say that I used to drink, and it was absolutely terrible. And now I don't drink, and it's absolutely marvelous. And that's as much as I'd like to say. Thanks.
I want to talk about Girl in the Cafe, a 2005 film that you starred in, written by Richard Curtis, directed by David Yates. One review said it's the best romantic comedy at a G8 summit you'll ever see. You play this very inhibited man, I guess in his 50s, who's kind of a high-ranking figure in the British finance office, the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
The civil service, yeah.
Right. And you meet this young woman, who is played by Kelly MacDonald, at a cafe. And you're this very inhibited fellow, and a relationship develops. And I thought we'd play a clip here fairly early in the film where you're taking a walk and getting acquainted, and you're outside. You'll hear some ambient noise. I think you're walking by a river. And I believe you're telling her about a dream.
Well, on the whole, in my dreams, people are begging me to join the Rolling Stones. I'm sitting at home, and the phone goes, and it's Mick Jagger and Ron Wood together on speakerphone, I suppose, pleading with me to inject a bit of new blood into the band. Or I'm at the office and they say, someone's waiting for you downstairs, and I get in the lift down and there's Keith Richards waiting on the sofa in the lobby, and he gives me his guitar. and says, come on, man, you have the music, play. We'll give as much heroin as you like. Just lend us your hot legs.
And that's my guest, Bill Nye, playing the lead in the film Girl in the Cafe. This character is just, if there's an opposite to the exuberant rocker that you play in Love Actually, it's this guy. You want to talk about, there's a rhythm to his speech. How do you get this terribly inhibited guy?
Well, it's one of my favorite roles. It's something I absolutely understand. And also there is an element in it which reminds me of my father. My father was not unlike him in terms of he had a very uncertain kind of charm, but he wasn't overly sure of himself. He was a principled man, and he conducted himself impeccably and functioned very successfully in terms of his life. But he was undermined in a fundamental way. So it's not a portrait of my father or anything, but it is reminiscent of him. And it was, in my mythology, it was my kind of tender thank you to my father, because he's somebody I admire, and I admire anyone who is similarly undermined and yet they are victorious.
And when you say undermined, you mean what?
I mean what they would probably currently call self-esteem problems, or they would call, a basic kind of insecurity where your head sells you a negative idea of yourself. And you have to work out that if you're lucky, that anything negative that happens in your head is probably a lie. But it doesn't stop manufacturing this kind of negative propaganda, and you have to operate anyway. So I find that kind of struggle, I find it very moving, and I found it very affecting in my father. And in that character, my father would incidentally kill me if he could hear me talking like this, but I mean it with all respect. And with that character, it was very satisfying to play, and very satisfying to play with Kelly MacDonald, because she was so minutely responsive to everything you did. That's rarer than you might imagine.
I mean, were you undermined in that way? I mean, were you someone who's...
I had a whole kind of factory in my head, which with a lot of negative propaganda machines working overtime. And I did have an anti-talent for describing myself negatively to myself.
Wow, not the kind of thing that you would think an actor would
Well,
would
you'd
bear.
Be surprised, actually. I think you might be surprised. The people who are attracted to it often aren't the people you would imagine would be attracted to. They're not the gregarious ones. They're not the life and soul of the party. I know people who are household names who really have to put themselves through serious kind of discomfort in order to do their job. And, they are rarely at peace with anything they've done. And it seems to be, I don't know that it's an equation that you have to be like that in order to be any good. I know that there is that terrible, irritating equation they come up with, which is that if you're not scared on stage, for instance, if you're not scared opening a play, you won't be any good. And I think that's probably true. If you're on stage with somebody who seems completely unconcerned, I think you're in trouble. That's my view. Because I know some great, great actors who, they have no idea why they're... Sir Michael Gambon, who is in Page 8, is categorically a genius. I've seen him many times on stage and on film. He is one of that rare group who are, as they say, it's a cliche, but they are touched by genius. He doesn't know that. He doesn't want to hear me saying it. But he's not emboldened by that because he can't experience it. I can stand it, as I do often with Sir Michael, and I rarely use the, you don't call people Sir this or Sir that. I mean, David Hare is Sir David Hare, but people don't. So with Sir Michael, I absolutely make a point of it because I think of him as one of the leaders, if not the leader of my profession in England. And, like me, he has to persuade himself that he can be an actor, every now and again as well.
We're speaking with Bill Nye. His new movie is Page 8. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with actor Bill Nye. He stars with Rachel Weisz in the new film, Page 8, which will be shown on public television stations. I wanted to ask you also about State of Play, the British TV series 2003. You know, an American film was later made starring Russell Crowe. If folks haven't seen the British version, it's a terrific video rental. And Bill Nye, you play in this series, you play a newspaper editor, Cameron Foster. And the story surrounds the death of a woman who is the staff member of a member of parliament with whom the member might have been having an affair. And there are all kinds of sinister connections. And we're going to listen to a scene here in which a police investigator arrives and he's looking for reporters on your staff who have been looking into this murder, and they believe that your staff and your reporters may have information relevant to the investigation. You're the editor, and you're kind of trying to deflect their inquiries. Let's listen.
I'm not in the habit of lying. She's not here.
She's working on the Kelvin Stagg murder.
Correct.
With your chief reporter, Cal McCaffrey.
Also correct.
Is he here?
I believe not. Mr. Bell.
No, it's Detective Chief Inspector Bell.
If you want to talk to busy people, you make a date or risk disappointment.
You tell me the extent of their investigations into that murder?
No.
Well, you're their editor.
They haven't filed a story yet.
Oh, what, so they just, run around spending your budget without recourse?
Seniors do. I know, I don't like it. I'd rather be a dictator, but no one would work for me.
One of my officers was murdered. Don't piss me about. Now, Della Smith warned Stuart Brown that the patient he was guarding was a potential target for reprisals. Now, where did she get the authority to present that theory?
I could have. Well, my mother could have given you that from the TV reports. A gunman tries to kill a witness, but not quite. It stands to reason the motive for shooting the guy is still valid.
Well, she sought him out at 11 p.m. to tell him that.
You've met Della?
Interviewed her.
Beautiful woman, recently dumped by long-term boyfriend. It's a lonely job. Maybe she took a shine to your Stuart Brown. I really can't speculate. Well, I can, obviously. I just have, but it's not helpful, is it?
And that's my guest, Bill Nye, from the British TV series State of Play. You want to just talk a little bit about this role?
Sure. It was a great role, and it went down very well, guess what, with journalists. And I had a couple of requests from journalists, one from the Times newspaper here and one from the Guardian newspaper in England, saying, could they come and work for me? Because they like that. I think that what journalists liked about it, and quite right too, was that they, for once, they were given an heroic role. And they were seen to be, you know, courageous and righteous. But it was a great role and a great series. And it was one of those, you knew you were in a hit, because people you hadn't heard from for years would phone up and say, what happens in the end? Because I'm going on holiday and I really got to know before I leave. You know, it became like a cliffhanger for the nation. So it was very cool to be in it.
There's a wonderful moment early in, I think it's the first episode, where there's a news planning meeting and one of your senior reporters kind of gets in your face and gives you a profanity-laced kind of barb. And then you say, oh, don't try that at home, kids.
Yes.
Right. You know,
that was a sweet one.
You bring a lovely touch of irony to a lot of this, and you have that little chortle. Are you a practitioner of deadpan humor in your private life?
I guess I am, yeah. I guess I that is my flavor of comedy. You know, that's my enthusiasm is for that kind of dryness is what I like, and it's what I enjoy watching in other performers. I like when humor is kind of buried. It's still effective, it still makes you laugh, but it's kind of disguised as naturalism, you know, as it's perfectly integrated into the story and into the dialogue and everything. You disguise it till the last minute. I remember when I did Girl in the Cafe, which had proper jokes in it, beautiful jokes, as you'd expect from Richard Curtis, but I'd just seen a film that became one of my favorite films immediately. It went in like top five, if not number one, which was called Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, yeah, Adam Sandler, yeah.
Yeah, and Emily Watson, and the Paul Thomas Anderson movie, which I absolutely revere that movie. It's kind of, and one of the things I love about it is Adam Sandler's performance, because he's absolutely deadpan, and yet it makes you laugh. So I wrote the words Adam Sandler at the first page of Girl in the Cafe, because I aspired to the kind of undercover light comedy performance. That's what I like, where it's there are no concessions made to the fact that you're trying to be amusing. You don't sell it in any way at all. You do, but the audience don't get to hear about it until they laugh. That's as best as I can describe it.
Well, Bill Nye, it's been fun. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Bill Nye spoke with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies. Nye co-stars in the new BBC movie Page 8, which will be shown Sunday on public television. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. And you can join us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at NPR Fresh Air. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Myers, John Sheehan, Heidi Simon, and Teresa Madden. I'm Terry Gross.